What's happening? This is 9/11, and you're tuned in to AVG Podcast. You know how we do it. Let's get to it. So y'all know I'm excited about all my guests that come. Y'all know y'all tired of me saying that, but this one here is one that's really special to me, man. This is a childhood friend of mine, and he is the assistant director of student health, student athlete mental health at LSU, Bruce Buggs. How you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me, brother.
So, man, like, it's been a long time. And before we get into the podcast, I want to truly let people know what type of man you are and how I got introduced to you. So, back in the day, it was around my second, I think I was going to the third grade. And my mom and dad, they were getting a divorce. So, I was, you know, just to let y'all know, I'm from the village. I was from one side of the town, and he's from another side of town. And so, just so happened, the side of town that he was living in, my mom had a job at a school, Reed Elementary, which was smack dab in the middle of his neighborhood, catacorner to his house. So fast forward to that part of the story, I didn't know nobody. I was an outsider. I think for the first year I was there, I think my cousin Rod D was there and Tony, they were there. But after that, I didn't know nobody. So then it was like when my mom had faculty meetings, like I said, this is not my neighborhood, so I don't know nobody. Man, this man and his twin sisters, Candace and Crystal, man, when I say they took me in like family, treated me like they had known me all my life. Of course, I wasn't that old, but it was just at that point in your life, man, you know, kids already got their friends, got their little cliques. So I never got to tell you at that stage, but I do want to tell you now, man, I appreciate how y'all took me in, what y'all did for me just as young me at that time, yeah. Man. So I appreciate
that. Bro, I'm glad to hear that from you, man, because I didn't even know you even knew that part of just kind of how we were, bro. You was a new kid on the block, bro, in the school. I remember coming home. We didn't have class together,
mm-hmm.
but my sisters knew you.
Yeah.
And they came home one day, they was like, "Bruce, this is dude named Avery. He's so, see, you don't know nothing about this, but if I'm
yeah.
out again, this dude named Avery, he's so cool. Need to get him to hang out, come by the house. You know, he dresses cool. He's different."
I was yeah.
like, man, I ain't never heard of a brother named Avery, but I've never heard that name before.
Yeah.
But a black dude named Avery. And so I said, well, we gotta meet Avery. I gotta meet you now.
Yeah, yeah.
So my sisters adored you, man. They looked up to you. They thought you were so cool, you know, and thought you'd be part of the clique, man. Just you fit in just right, bro. So was just glad to have you, man. Because ever since then, bro, I've been kind of following you off and on. I know we went different paths, but I remember, man, you was that new dude on the block, bro. Just positive. That's a fun dude, man. You know, you're just a cool guy, man. Back then.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
For all your listeners, for all your audience, you've always been a cool guy, man, since day one. Since third grade.
Hey, man, I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that, man. Y'all just don't know, man. That meant a lot, though, man, because like I say, I was the alien out there. I was like, woo.
Yeah.
Them was some waters. Yeah. Reed was one of them schools, like, if you ain't know somebody, like, you really, my mom had already gave me that speech, God bless her soul, man. Like, hey, don't let nobody push you around. Hey, don't let, and it was just so good how warm and, man, y'all were to me and just opened up y'all homes to me. Like I say, I come across the street, man, and just play with y'all while she having a faculty visa, man, have a good time. I'd be mad when she left. I'm like, nah, at first I used to be panicking. I'm like, nah, I'm good. Nah, I got me some partners. Yeah. So I appreciate that, man.
Sorry, man.
No doubt, man. So like I said, man, when I introduced you, you are the assistant director of student athletes mental health at LSU. How long have you been in that position?
I've been here 6 years, man. I started here in 2017, bro. But I've been a therapist going on 20 years now. You know, I'm like an OG in this thing, man.
For real?
Yeah, man. So I didn't know I was going to be in this position, like, right off. You know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But it's been a blessing ever since, man. I've been here for, like I said, 6 years, man. And it's almost not like work to me, man. It's just coming in, man. It's just having the same energy, man. I just love coming to work.
Got
6 years, man.
Okay. So, like I say, I kind of told how you were early on in life. You always had this, you know, this opening, welcoming spirit. So what do you think about, you know, early on in life kind of helped shape you for this role that you're holding out, that you currently have?
So I do a lot of recruiting. I help a lot of teams with recruiting. And so when we, you know, when we're talking to families, we're talking to prospective athletes that come here,
mm-hmm.
I always give them my story on why I'm getting up. Very real and authentic about why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, hey, it's because of pain. And so coming up, bro, my first team I ever made it on was, I was trying to get on with the T-ball team.
Yeah.
I couldn't hit that thing for nothing, bro. I couldn't hit that ball off the tee, and I just kept hitting the tee.
Uh-huh.
And nobody ever bring me back to no tryout again for nothing.
So
I had to get it on my own. And just over the years, I always worked really hard, bro, to make my teammates better, make myself better. And at the same time, I was struggling in school.
Mm.
And by the time I got to sixth grade, I actually fell to sixth grade.
Mm.
So that was tough for me, bro. So I think that's when I met your wife. Kim was going to Acadian
Cisco
for the first time during this time, too.
Exactly. Okay.
And the only thing I knew to do was play basketball. And my PE teacher used to gas me up, bro, because I don't know, I could shoot.
Mm.
You know, I could defend. And he was like, you need to go out for a basketball team. Mm. I ain't think, you know, so, but over the years, man, just working real hard, rejection after rejection, man, just being told no all the time, it's not your time, you're not ready. So I never really knew how to deal with rejection, bro, because I heard so many no's. It's over the years, man, and then I never was the best basketball player on my team, but I was talented enough to make some noise. I played at Mountain Junior High for a couple of years, plus Mountain High for all 4 years, and we never beat Peabody, you know, my whole time, but that's the biggest rivalry. But I'm on the end where a lot of athletes come in right now where they get here, but they're getting rejection for the first time. They know for the first time. And I never wore purple and gold. You know what I mean? I never played college basketball. I had one opportunity at Northwestern State. That's the only reason why I went to Northwestern State my first year.
Gotcha.
I had a walk-on opportunity for basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And so and my roommate, he was the only one that knew about it. And he went and asked if they were still doing walk-ons tryout.
Mm-hmm.
But literally, he came back and he told me, you know, they're not taking anybody else on the team. But literally, you know, I had already went to the coach's office.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me to come back next year.
Yeah.
That hurt, dog.
Man.
Like when I tell you that hurt, like from, because basketball was my life.
You know,
that's all I ever knew.
Yeah.
And so, I didn't know what anxiety was. I didn't know what depression was. I was just kind of isolating. I was, you know, staying up late at night, playing the game, making bad decisions, just doing dumb stuff. You know, when I was at Northwestern, I was in Anchorage.
Gotcha.
And so I was like, you know, I'm a leave. And everybody couldn't believe I was going to leave, you know, Northwestern, because I established some friendships and stuff. But after I left Northwestern, that was the end of my athletic career. And so, man, I know a lot about just struggles and pain and academic struggles. I got kicked out of school. I know we're getting to that too, but I got kicked out of LSUA when I moved back home to LSUA.
Okay.
Ended up getting a 1.5 GPA.
Man.
They kicked me out of school and told me, you know, you can come back, only take 2 classes and pay for school out of your pocket.
Now, do you think that was due to some of the rejections you had faced and you just wasn't, you know, really applying yourself, or you were just kind of over it at that point?
I was kind of over it at that point, man. I just had no backup. It was just always just basketball. And I never really, that's the only reason why I went to school, was to play basketball.
Gotcha.
So I never had a background. I thought I wanted to be a veterinarian. I thought I wanted to be an interior decorator. I thought I wanted to try all these other things. And I didn't really get into psychology until later on.
Gotcha.
And so that was part of me giving up, you know, and part of why I needed. Why I do what I do today is just to kind of be that person off the courage. And got a lot of athletes that want to give up sometimes.
Yeah.
Can you still have the courage to compete and play knowing that there's some fear left, you know, fear out there of not making it or not accomplishing things like that. So, because it's tough when they hear no or rejection, they don't start for the first time like they used to playing, bro. Yeah. It's pretty tough. It's a tough adjustment.
So, and like I said, Bruce is at LSU. So when we're talking about athletes, and there's no knock on other colleges, every college, you know, once you go to college, you're meeting a better level of competition than you face in high school regardless. But the reality of the situation, when you go to a university or institution like LSU, those are one of the schools, no matter how academically sound they are, they have some of the premier athletes. So when you're looking across, when you're looking across them, because you deal with, when you say athletic, that's all across the board, right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So yeah. How are some of those, like I know you've got a love for basketball, but how is it when you get all of these elite athletes in a room and you have to tell them, you know, how to deal with those no's or what you've been through? Like, I know you see the pain in their eyes, you see where it come from, but how do you you take the emotions out of it and still do your job as what you do as the athletic director?
So that's a good question, man. We're definitely trained for that, to be able to take emotions out of it. And part of it is me being vulnerable, man. Part of it is being authentic. You know, just not saying everything's going to be okay, and not telling them that, hey, you know, there's going to be roses on the other side. You know, it's a real authentic experience that you may or you may not make it. And for a lot of them, bro, because they've had so much success, man, over the years, like, they don't know any other way. And so you get a lot of confidence out of that. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of confidence being injury-free. You get a lot of confidence out of knowing your family at home is good. Like, everybody good, everybody's straight at home.
Mm-hmm.
Playing time, that's automatic. You know, you're going to play a whole lot in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Academics, you know, you used to making A's and B's, you still want to make A's and B's in college. If you're making C's and D's in high school, you still want to make C's and D's.
Mm-hmm.
But we all know that challenging coaching and circumstances,
mm-hmm.
we're exposed the heck out of it, bro.
You're right.
And they don't see it coming.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
First taste of adulthood.
The first taste of adulthood, bro. Mm-hmm. They don't see it coming, man. And it just knocks them totally out of the water, man. They don't see it. And so I believe that there's a good possibility that we stop growing if everything is perfect every day.
Very true.
Like if every day everything is certain.
Very true.
Right? We stop growing.
You get comfortable. So
you're comfortable because no kid comes to this program saying, oh, bet, perfect. I finally got the injury I wanted. Now I can focus on academics.
It don't happen like that.
I'm going to let grow start over me because he's better than me and I can learn from him. Yeah, let me sit back. Right? It just hits you out of the blue, man. Like, it really takes you out of the blue. And so when they hear that, when the athletes hear that, I think they hear it. And I think it gives them an opportunity to be like, oh, okay, well, if this ever happens to me, I got somebody I can share my experiences with.
You know? Gotcha.
Because we share the same, like, I don't know what it's like to wear purple and gold, but I know what it's like to have your dreams just blow up in front of your face and you don't see it coming.
Man.
Or your expectations. I know what that's like.
Yeah.
And that's across the board.
Yeah, across the board. That's life. Yeah.
That's life, bro.
For real. So with that, do you have like real personal relationships to coaches so you can tell, like, okay, this kid here, I might need to let him know. I might need to be a little, you know, a little more clear on your path you might need to take while you're here. Versus right. just letting them, you know, like you say, see the world through rose-colored glasses and think, okay, well, maybe next year is it. You have to really, because like when I say LSU, and I keep reiterating that, because these are the kids that were the best thing since sliced bread probably in this city. And like you say, they don't get too many, oh, no, you're going to sit out this week or you're not going to play this year. Like they were probably four-year starters because you don't get to an institution that or offer the scholarship, but not too many just walk-on positions at that university.
No, right, absolutely. Really closely connected with the coaches, man. So for the past couple of years, every summer, man, we just finished up with baseball and softball yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But we meet with all the coaches, man, and just kind of talk about our role, what we do. So the teams I primarily work with is baseball, women's soccer, track and field, men's basketball, men's golf, and I'm not gonna miss one. I believe that might be it.
Okay.
I could work with any other team as well. Mm-hmm. Work with other athletes from other sports too. But we have their numbers.
Mm-hmm.
If coaches see something or it's something I see, we can talk about it.
Gotcha.
You know, sometimes it's being a part of that staffing sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, who's showing up this week, you know, where their mindset is or what's going on at home. Things that may be causing some issues that's affecting their play, you know, or
gotcha.
Even in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
What's impacting their grades? So pretty close relationship with a lot of the coaches. The first established relationship I ever had, man, really close, was Coach Wade, actually, with his basketball.
Gotcha.
And he knew I was working with a couple of his guys before I even met him. And I was walking in one day from just finished parking. Mm-hmm. And he was coming out one of the offices, and he introduced himself to me and asked if I would ever want to travel, you know, with the team. That had never happened before. You know, sports psychologists hadn't traveled with any of the teams. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. Like, I wasn't thinking he was serious. I thought he was just like Hollywood talk.
Yeah.
Come
tell it. You know, they kind of how you doing question when you don't really just, yeah. Y'all don't really want to know, just say you good and let's keep it moving. I got you.
And then he hit me up. It was like, yeah, pick the games you want to come to. And that's when it started.
You Man.
Know, that was in 2018. We built a relationship since then, and we still have one today. I know he's at McNeese now, and they have all that stuff going on, but he really cared about his athletes, man. He was really
asked to
join the team and do team building stuff, team, individual things like that. So those relationships are really important, establishing a service like we have with the athletes. But sometimes the athletes just need a space where they can come in and chop it up about whatever and not feel judged, criticized, the coach gonna take away their playing time and stressing, or, you know, this coach or a teammate may think I'm soft or whatever. I provide that opportunity for them. And the coaches know that, and they like that.
Okay.
They appreciate it.
Speaking to that, now this era here, now you know, like I say, our era we grew up, it was a little rougher. As far as like mental toughness, especially like for young black males, just the black community, period. Mental health wasn't a thing we really harped up on or really highlighted in our community. Like you say, you were dealing with anxiety. It didn't have, because I don't know about that time, you didn't just fully elaborate on it. Did you have anybody or did you go to counseling for it at that time? But where did you find like help at that time? And are athletes that you find today willing to come knock on your door versus having somebody, you know, seek him out, or, hey, I see he's going through something, you might need to get with it?
Good question, bro. So a lot of the parents I talk to today are my age or our age, you know.
We got college kids now, yeah.
We got college kids.
Yeah.
And so that's the first thing I tell them. It's like, we were coming up, you know, the 90s. Did we talk about mental health? Nope.
Not a bit.
Did we think you were weird for acting? You know, yeah. You know, did we judge you and criticize you? Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah.
And so I ain't crazy, you know. You know, that's the thing. I ain't going on mental health.
Yeah.
That's a judgment thing. That's a stereotype that we have.
And we were dealing with the most trauma.
Oh, bro. We just going through it.
Going through it.
So, and our parents only knew what they knew, right?
That's it.
And the impact of just their dealings in life, you know, came down on us too, in a way, you know. So when I got kicked out of school, bro, when LSUA kicked me out of school, they told me I could come back. I could only take two classes, pay for school out of my pocket, and I had to meet with this administrator.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, bet. Okay, whatever it is. So I'm meeting with this older white lady, bro, like every week. And, you know, we have to do another podcast on this.
Yeah.
I had some personal things going on in my life, and time was really tough, sweat supported. But I just noticed, I was just like, just talking to this woman about just random stuff. And then over the years, my GPA started getting better. I had a little bit more clarity on what I wanted to do, as far as career. I'm not hanging with these guys on my wit.
Yeah. Right, change their circle. Yeah. Alexandra. Yeah. People don't know our city. It's easy to get caught up.
Yeah. Easy.
Yeah.
And finally get that GPA up 2.0. I get to graduate school later on. And I just happened to call her just to give her an update on how I was doing. She was like, nobody ever really calls back. It's good to hear from you, you know. Glad you're doing so well. So I'm doing the presentation. This is years later. I'm doing the presentation. I was, who was that woman I was talking to like every week, and then when every 2 weeks, and they want some money, and they're like, who was that? Bro, I looked her up and I saw she was a LPC, a licensed professional counselor. Like,
wow.
I was like, what? I was in therapy? You know, I wow. didn't know.
Because they didn't present it to you as therapy, right?
They would have been like, nah, I ain't going.
Yeah, yeah. Because like you say, that was frowned upon in our community.
That was frowned upon, bro. Like, they didn't do that.
Yeah.
So they knew, they called her an administrator.
Wow.
And so, I mean, I thank LSUA for setting it up like that and having the resources like that in place. Because I don't know, like I said, I don't know where I would be with part of her help, you know, and assisting me in doing it.
So do you, go ahead, I'm gonna let you.
And so I believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it works.
So do you think that sparked your interest with being a counselor at that point right there?
I think so, because I always wanted to be a college therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, moving on, you know, moving from then, I always knew I wanted to work in a college setting, because in college is when I first experienced my first letdown.
Mm-hmm.
My first losses, bro, like deaths that
man,
confused me. And actually, you know, Charles, hey, with God rest his soul.
God rest his soul, man.
He was the first person, bro, that was close to me that died. That I, you know.
Man,
you know what I mean?
Do you know?
I didn't know nobody else.
Just to highlight Charles Hayward, because man, that was LeBron for people that's not from Alexandria. That was our LeBron, like my homeboy Dedrin Bailey. I remember he dunked on him in junior high with a cast on his hand when his hand was broke at Pineville Junior High. And we was all like dead under the goal with his hand up, and it was crazy. But just with you was on that team. Yeah, that whole Tens, Casper, all them, like that squad that y'all had a real squad. But when you said that kind of made me think about as far as childhood friends. Because when I graduated, you know, I'm short, but he was one of the 6'9", he was one of the tallest cats in the school. So we had a little picture. We was the first class graduated at on the middle of the field at Peabody. So we took a picture on the 50-yard line. So it just looked crazy. And I can remember, man, I was in a basic training. No, I wasn't in basic training. I had already moved to permanent party. I was at Fort Hood. And man, when my dad called me, I used to watch, you know, UNC Charlotte, where he had transitioned to playing ball with him and Kid Smith. And I, you know, they used to have a shirt over the chair or the towel over the chair where he sit while he was going through treatments. And man, when my dad called me with that news, man, I went out and sat on the steps by my, because that was the first classmate, if I'm not mistaken, I don't want to overlook nobody in class of 9-7 from Peabody. But if I'm not mistaken, that was the first classmate we lost. And it ripped me to know somebody I grew up with. And we barely 19, 20. And he wasn't there no more. I couldn't see him play no more. I couldn't say, hey, man, my homeboy on TV, he gone. And I was like, wow. It was this a very eye-opening fact that we are mortal. And that was something that, you know, at that time, you don't really realize that when you're that young.
He was everything
for our city. Like, that's who we thought, like, it was like one of them situations, and I always tell people, man, I big up my whole city. As long as you're doing something positive, I'm behind. It was just one of them situations where I just feel pride in bragging on him. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Just, hey, man, like, I know this kid, but I know I played against him. Like, that's my partner. Like, I can show you pictures. I used to bring out pictures. Like, I really know him. So it was like I say, man, we didn't have that Markel Brown way later on in life, but we didn't have, at that time, our city was very underrepresented as far as professional athletes. In any sport. So that was like our meal ticket as far as not just, you know, capitalizing but bread wise, but just notoriety.
Put this on the map.
Yeah, right. Just notoriety. Yeah. Period. And we took pride in that. We all followed and pulled for Charles no matter what school you went to. So like you say, man, rest in peace, man. And I'm glad you shared that story with us, man.
He was the first person, man, because and the thing about it, bro, is I couldn't even go to the funeral, bro, because I didn't know how to process the emotions and think about. And so, of course, people are like, well, you should have went to the funeral. And I was like, I didn't know how to take it, bro.
I feel you, man.
See him, like, different.
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because we've been, like I say, he lived in Cross Park. I was in the Almond Quarters, and that's right up the road.
Right up street.
I remember him, I remember everything, bro. You know?
Yeah.
So, when that happened, me and him was pretty tight. I remember when he left for Peabody, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Chill together, we used to be eating lunch together. We had the same class.
Man, real humble and one of the funniest dudes you could ever meet, man.
One of the funniest dudes. And so I had a lot of questions, bro. Like,
mm-hmm.
Like, for God, like, how could you how? Somebody so wholesome? Like, how could you do that? You know, so
So I understand, man. Trust me, I understand, bro.
You know where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
And so part of that is being a black man. We don't know how to express, some of us don't know how to express emotions and feelings and crying or, you know,
man,
having to be vulnerable. We don't know how to do that. We didn't know how to do that.
Now just think, just about what you said, that's very important, because growing up, like I say, this time frame, we got a kinder, gentler America. But back when we was growing up, what your parents say? Yeah. Boy, stop crying. You a little boy. Stop all that crying. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Not knowing that crying is important, man. That's a release point. When you holding in all that tension and you holding in all that pain and anger, man, it can eat you away, man. I've seen people die from grieving. I've seen people die from, stress. So sometimes that cry is what you need, especially as a man. Sometimes even you got to get by yourself. You don't want just nobody to see. Get by yourself, man. Hey, black men, y'all out there, release, man. Release that pain, man.
Get it off your chest, man. Get that out.
For real. And speaking of mental health, and I know you say you played a big role with the basketball team. Or you play a big role with the basketball team. Were you there during the Ben Simmons era? Because I know like another thing, when he hit LSU, man, that was like truly like the next LeBron. That was the hype. Okay, this kid is gonna take. Sure. Oh, what was the vibe and what was the buzz? And I know he's kind of went through some stuff in the NBA. Still wish that young man nothing but the best. But what was the vibe like around the yard when he hit the campus?
Well, I came after him.
A little after, so, okay.
He left in like, I think 15, 16, and I got here in 17.
Gotcha, okay, gotcha.
But he still had the impact still felt throughout the program. Fans, things like that, like the trainers, the staff here, like they knew about him, the folks over at academics, they were still talking. They're not as much today, but just because he had mixed emotions and mixed feelings about being here and not getting paid.
Yeah.
The whole NIL situation that we have today.
Yeah.
Maybe he would have stayed longer. Maybe he would have had a longer career here at LSU if. So a lot of things were helping the student athletes, as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, but I never met him. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's been back since he's been gone.
No, it was kind of one of those. Didn't he have a coach on the staff or something of that effect that was friends with his dad? It was kind of something that linked all that together, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Now, so, go ahead.
Yeah. So new coaches come in. New players come in.
This new regime. Flip the page.
Right.
Now, you brought up something that also been catching my attention from afar as far as the NIL deal. And, a lot of, especially us, when we go to college, it came from kind of improper situation. We didn't have some of the money some of our counterparts might have on the team. How do you feel about that NIL? Because, I hear a lot of, opposition. Where it comes from, and then you hear the positive side of it. Just your perspective and seeing young men, young black men handle that much money, because when you're talking about LSU, you're talking about some elite athletes. You're not just talking about some people that's barely making rosters. So when with the NIL in place and, what it allows these young men to earn just off their name, image, and likeness, what do you feel about that?
It's a really good question. I think from a mental health standpoint, does it add another layer of just challenges? Absolutely, especially when it comes to, let's say, Avery Dufour is getting X amount of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Buggs, that's, maybe same position or maybe do this more or better, is not getting this, and that may have a family see that. You need to be doing this, you need to be doing that, or feeling just pressure to having to be making more or things like that can be an issue. Maybe not with everybody, but I could just see how that can impact an athlete. As far as it being helpful, managing money, that helps. I mean, for a lot of athletes, they don't know how to manage money. Mm-hmm. And so this gives them an opportunity to learn how to better take care of their finances if they have an NIL deal. So LSU has programs and people that come in and help with finances, and so they have designated people for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like they're just getting a lot of money and
just free fall.
Okay, y'all do what y'all do.
Yeah.
No, they have managers, they have people that teach them and help them be able to, save money and if you got investments and stuff like that. Yeah, so that's one thing I do appreciate about all, because, you know, they didn't know all that was coming. So they just set it up to where you can make sure you get the help and education about how to just manage your funds and, you know, look out for people, look out for bad investments, look out for people who's trying to give you deals that's maybe ripping you off, you know, things like that. So
I'm gonna give you I'm gonna give you a little bit of my perspective on it, because I have my pros and cons for it. Because when I see all of, you know, these coaches for so long, especially at the kind of colleges like Alabama, LSU, the Florida, just any other major college where especially like football is one of the driving forces for that universe, or the major basketball programs for that matter, Duke, Kentucky's, blue collar schools, blue bloods. But to me, these coaches were getting these enormous contracts, and you're looking at kids that really don't have much. And so that power, to me, it was always a little uncomfortable to hear coaches, you know, talk about kids as they transfer. You know, you got the influx of the transfer portal and stuff like that now. And it was just like that power that they had over these young black males, it always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And so when the NIL finally, because it was people like Reggie Bush and older athletes that were getting truly put it out, like when who was that, Pryor for a tattoo and some shoes or stuff like car dealership, Terrell Pryor, LeBron to a lesser degree with the Hummer. You always knew he was going to the league. But they were getting penalized for just being them, because these were stuff that people were giving, which was now in place, name, image, and likeness. So that took away that aspect of it, because you couldn't punish these kids because now it's even playing field. But it, to me, it also feels like they empowered those young men a little bit too, because now you can't just talk to these kids that just not looking for you as a way out, just you not their God anymore. What can you do for me to get me to the next level? I can go play at another school. Now, my cons of it are, when you turn loose these young men with that much money, like I say, we're not coming from family or generational wealth. So now you're that meal ticket early on. And sometimes I think that type of money that early on, because I'm just imagining young Avery coming from the village, or you coming from the all milk quarter, turned loose with that type of bread, sophomores, man, what? And just the advantage people can take of them at that point, or even being a detriment to themselves, you know what I'm saying? Having that type of money and getting the big head, or, you know, or trying to save everybody in the neighborhood, bring all their homeboys up with them. So those are the cons to it to me, but I love that it's in place that these young men can't get penalized anymore. So I was just, you being behind the curtains, behind the scenes, of a major college, I was just interested to see how you felt about it and what you kind of see as far as like the athletes you deal with.
Yeah, there's definitely some pros and cons to it on both sides, from the coaching aspect of it, like you talked about, and definitely from like the family aspect too.
Family can drain you.
Yeah, man. Even if you didn't have the NIL stuff, right? Family stuff, you know what I mean? So I think it's a matter of perspective. It's not going anywhere. It's NIL is here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, should there be different ways to protect athletes and them not being taken advantage of? Absolutely. More education should be held. And it keeps us busy, like on the outside too. I've set families at them, or people switching it up on them, different things like that.
Yep.
Man, it's no different from what we've always seen. It's just it's a little bit more
magnified. Anytime you implement money in any situation, because you look at something like death in the black community, we argue over pots and pans. It will tear up a family. I was supposed to have that gun, or that truck was mine. So you anything where you put that much money, it just totally magnifies problems in the black community. Because we wasn't raised around like a lot of investors in our family and people with stock, buying stocks. Yeah, we didn't see that. So a lot of the licks that were out there as far as money-wise, we just not catching up. And so
it was just
interesting to see when that NIL took place, who was mad about it, who celebrated it. I would just sit back and watch. Sometimes I just like to see, you know, I just like to see the shockwaves go through the nation and what people say and how they respond to stuff. So it was just real interesting, man. What do you enjoy most about your role?
Man, so much, man. I know the championships are cool, you know, Natty's, SEC stuff, you know, the individual success for me, bro, it's the light bulb for a lot of athletes that they see, you know, that they didn't see before. Them actually having courage to actually push through some stuff when they think it's all the way, or it's you know, severe injury that takes them out, where they get depressed and not want to keep going, and just the rehab, you know, and just seeing them just come back, man, you know, it's just where they didn't see anything before, and I follow them, you know, and so it's just them figuring it out, man. They know how to ball.
Yeah.
They know how to play.
It's something you've been doing since 6-7 years old.
They've been doing it forever. Yeah. It's the part about the resiliency that they struggle with.
Facts.
They haven't really seen that kind of stuff. So when I see them push through some resilience issues that cause them to have to be resilient, I love it, man, because that's the part I can connect to, you know, as well, personally. Because,
yeah.
Bro, I was dealt.
Yeah.
Stuff, bro. And
yeah.
Remember giving up, and then, boom, trying to find a way, you know, and found a way, and kept going, and kept going, and kept going. And so, a lot of times I see a lot of that in me, and that makes me happy. But just to see them figure it out, having their own story, you know, of adversity, dealing with adversity, is a good thing to see. Man, you hate to see them go through it.
Mm-hmm.
And you want them to know that it's going to be okay, but that's still up to them
to
figure it out. You know, sometimes they need some challenges and things that like that to happen, man. Unfortunately, to get it.
Yeah, you know, I feel you.
When they see it and they come out on the other end smiling, like, wow, I couldn't believe I went through that and I did it.
Didn't even know you had that strength. You know? Like that part you just touched on right there, because like you say, I know you have your professional boundary you put up, so to speak, but I know you, like I say, from a young dude, like, and people don't know this is actually a reunion today, like we hadn't actually talked in years, but I know you from a young dude, and you've always had a pure heart, so just knowing how you are and knowing some of the adversity, like you see, or some of the trauma that you see these young men go through, how do you separate that self? How do you separate yourself from some of those situations and try not to take on too much, because you see some of your situations, not so much maybe the same thing, but you see somebody who's experienced pain, like someone who's lost a mother, or somebody who, when they talk about it, you can look in their eyes and see, okay, you felt what I felt. It's a different type of pain. And so being that you can connect with some of them on that level, how do you separate yourself and put that professional boundary up so it doesn't drain you, so to speak?
So for therapists, good question, bro. For therapists, that's what you call transference and counter-transference.
Man, that's deep.
So transference is when the client says something to you that impacts you. When you say something to a client about your personal stuff, that impacts them. Counter-transference is if the client says something and it impacts me, and I can't focus, and I'm like distracted because, you know, I'm thinking about my situation. So we're trained to learn how to spot it, you know, notice it when it comes. The other big part is actually dealing with your own stuff. Mm-hmm. I've had to deal with my own stuff. You know, I've had to deal with my own trauma. Just my own self-sabotage, you know, my anxiety, you know, times when I was depressed, you know, just I've had to seek help, you know, and figure it out, or pray, you know, and it's not... It's praying too, but it's action that comes with it.
Action,
you know?
Yes,
in the black community, man, we go to church, and it's like, okay,
you think that's where it stopped?
It's over with.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, it's stuff you got to work on every day, you know. And so for me, for them, to meet them where they are is number one for me. Just as adults, bro, we got the ability to look back. As young teenagers, you know, young women and young men, they don't have the ability to look forward, right? They don't know what's coming.
We know where you've been. Yeah, exactly. Right. Might have walked in some of those same paths.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, man. So, you know, we old, bro. Like,
yeah,
you don't
for
know
real.
What you're talking about.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. I hear you on that. Mm-hmm. I hear you. You know, and so for me, it's not telling them how to do it and what to do. It's if, you know, do you think you're doing it the right way? How do you think you're getting through it? you think of something better you need to do, I always engage them instead of telling them what I would do, you know, or telling them how they need to be doing it, because they have to go through their own path, you know. And I have to hold them in positive regard, like meaning that I got to keep the same mentality, keep them in the same positive mind, frame of mind when I'm with them. I had to have probably the same positive frame of mind when I'm with them or when I'm interacting with them. Because I want them to keep coming back. Got to be genuine with them. Now, that doesn't mean, hey, man, you know, I'm not going to ever challenge them. You know, I'm going to say, hey, you know, man, I got some concerns, man. You said you were going to try this and do this. You coming back and doing this. Like, that must be tough for you not to follow through on that, you know.
Gotcha.
So it's ways you challenge them without being like, now I'm upset with you or for going out again or doing something you said.
The presentation is what matters.
Yeah, right, right. You said you was going to break up with him. You know, why are you still with him? You know, I can't do that. Like, man, so you got to say stuff like, because I've seen damaging relationships before. People hurt, you know, physical abuse, you know. I've seen that, you know. You know, you try to tell them, hey, he's going to go down this path. But you know, they got to go through it.
Got to go through it. Some lessons are best learned through experience. Some things you can get told as much as you want by somebody, but and some stuff you really have to experience in life. One other thing I wanted to kind of touch on with you while we kind of in that lane right there is, what is just some advice you make and reach out to some people that's maybe in our age group, not so much college students, to kind of relieve that stigma of seeking help, going to talk to like counselors or a mental health advisor or psychiatrist? Because like you say, as the time you went through it, it was presented to you where you didn't even know that you were actually having a dumping grounds for your problems, and it was allowing you to clear your head. So what is something maybe you can kind of tell some of the listeners, kind of relieve that stigma for maybe our age group that didn't grow up with that outlet?
That's a good question, bro. I typically give like an analogy of like a bridge, right? Like, we know how a bridge operates and how to connect people with mental health. So if you think about a bridge, how it operates, you got traffic all day, every day. Sometimes it's light, sometimes it's heavy. And I usually ask people, I was like, you know, does the bridge control how much traffic crosses it? Yes or no? It's probably no. Like, and at some point, would it be fair to say that that bridge needs reinforcing? At some point, yes or no? Obviously, yeah. But then the question I ask then is that, is it the bridge's fault, right? That it needs reinforcement? It's no, right? And sometimes in life, we ripping and running, we going here, going there. Sometimes we need tapping in. Sometimes we need to get stuff out because things get heavy. Things light sometimes, right? But at some point, just having some reinforcement, getting stuff off for anybody, can help. You know, and it's not your fault. Right? Because we live, we alive.
That's it.
We're gonna come across some hard stuff.
Like you say, you can't control that traffic. It could be an 18-wheeler or a smart car. You know what I'm saying? That's a good analogy. I like that, man. We'll put that in my bag.
Yeah.
Look, man, we're going to get a little lighter note, man. So how is it having, I know you say you deal with basketball, how is it having like Angel Reese of the Dastra Championships and, you know, that team there? Because they just, man, they did that. That was against all odds because people didn't pick them as the front runners when March Madness started and nothing like that. So what was the vibe around the yard like when those young ladies did their thing?
Oh, man, it's a beautiful vibe, man. They're just some special young women, man. Like, when I tell you they get after it, bro, they after it, man. But they love each other, man. Like,
that's what's up.
You see they in their kind of in their face, but they allow on the court. They allow each other to check each other like that.
I like man, that too. They, I like the way they challenge each other.
It starts from the top. It starts from Coach Mulkey. Coach Mulkey has that kind of culture where you compete and you get after each other, but you love each other. You know, and you tell them that, hey, I appreciate you for letting me check you.
Putting your ego to the side.
Yeah. And some of them are going to like, I don't know, you know, but then they just give in and it's like, oh, she loves me.
That's
why she's doing it.
Yeah.
It's a team thing. So
that's what's up.
together. When you see him right here, man, just passing him, man, just walking by him, man, he's laughing, smiling. Just, and they hang together, man.
That's bro, what's
they,
up,
they,
man.
They grow deep together, man.
A true team.
Yeah, they're a true team, bro. They go through it together. Just good vibe, man, just seeing them. You know, they just, it's so special young women, man. They're good, man. They're just good people, and that's what wins, man.
Man.
Good people. Some good results, bro.
For real. That's very well said. So, staying in that same lane, well, what can we expect from LSU this year? The ladies basketball team, football coming up. I'm sick of Alabama, man. Like what can we expect this year? Can you kind of give us a little peek into the future and what you see around the yard or what you're kind of hearing? Yeah.
I see national championships for both teams, man.
That's what's
up. And I'm not being biased, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
The women, for women's basketball, they got a special formula, man. It works. They bring a lot of key people back, bringing in a lot of key women, too. I think they got 4 McDonald's All-Americans, something crazy.
Wow.
They got a lot of support, man, not just from the athletic community, but the Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
Just people just outside of it, really. They really support the girls. They bring a lot of people in to cut with the morale.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of deep conversations, man. They do a lot for the community, too. Yeah. And then with the men, the football, they just got good vibes, too, man. Like I said, the coaching staff is great.
Mm-hmm.
They interact with them in a way that's to where they hold each other accountable. They hold themselves accountable.
Good stuff.
And I think they do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll mess up and they'll be like, hey, I can mess up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna do right by you the next time as a teammate.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you see that, bro, when I'm walking around and I just kind of listening to their conversations, you just kind of see how they operate. Now they're gonna get tested with each other.
Oh yeah.
But it's what you do after.
Like we play sports, so we know. Like in locker rooms, egos get flare up. You know, Timbers in my hard practice or some adversity on the field. But that's what being a true team and forming a true team is. Like you say, if you're always operating from that happy space, you're not growing. You know, you're not advancing. Like I say, pressure make diamonds, pressure bust pipes. So you need that. You know what I'm saying? Iron sharpens iron. So you need that player in your ear or that coach in your ear. You know, when you having those down moments or when you slacking and you need somebody to be like, come on, bro, you better than that.
They follow up.
Yeah.
That's the thing, they follow up. They boom, you know, they get into it, whatever. And sometimes it's just like, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, they do that, do what they gotta do, and then they follow back up about
that's made. That's made.
Instead of letting it, you know what I'm saying? We good.
That's
you know?
Made.
We had that, but we good. They do that a lot, man. So just with the talent they have, man, and everybody they got coming back and the leadership they got, man, you know, and Jade, I see them going far, man. You know, I just see it, bro.
Yeah.
They're going to beat Bama. Like, we beat Bama this year, bro.
That's what's up. Hey, I needed to hear that today. I needed to hear that today. Y'all don't know, man.
We'll go there next year.
That's what I need. Look, y'all don't know, man. My wife LSU alumni too, so it's major around the house. So we behind, and so that's why I love when you posted pictures. You got confetti on your championship hats.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, my boy out there right in the mix with that stuff, man. But hey, anything before we wrap up you want to plug or just you know tell people about at the yard on LSU or just what's going on with you?
For me, got a couple of things going on, man. Not too many people know about it, man, but I'm trying to work on a book, man. So
that's what's up. That's major.
There's a lot of things I've been working on, a lot of information I've been collecting. Well, I've already started on it, man. So
no, you got to come back for that, right?
Yeah, so we're going to come back. Definitely have it on here.
Okay.
Definitely want to talk about it. Definitely put it on here. Definitely have you in the loop on just your input and just your insight on it, man.
Yeah.
You follow it.
Yeah.
The other thing too is the mental health, bro. Like we're going through some trying times, man.
Man.
We're going through some hard stuff, bro.
Very true.
I think work-life balance, bro. Spending time with the people that you love, man. Spending time with people that rock with you, man. Like
man.
Really rock with you, not sometimes.
Man, that's made. That's made.
You know what I mean?
Yes, because this social media lifestyle got people twisted right now.
Oh, bro, yes. You know, limiting your time on social media, man.
Yes.
Like, you can't stay off of it, but just stay off for like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
come back.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Just have that cleanse.
You know, the people that you want to see post stuff or people you want to get messages from, set that up.
Yeah.
And you ain't got to, you know, respond to everything or look, you know. Cause that take a whole lot of time, bro.
It's draining. It's draining too, bro. Yeah.
But everybody, bro, take care of your mentals, man, and exercise. Get out there, exercise. I see you with your walking, man. You getting your exercise.
Yeah, bro. Man, I try.
I love it, man. I love.
Appreciate it. Appreciate
it.
Appreciate that.
And bro, shout out to you too, man. You know, giving your flowers too, man. Just doing this, having this platform, man, for people to talk on.
Thank you, man.
Back for the people back home and stuff like that, man. It's just a beautiful thing that you're doing, dog.
Appreciate that. And look, for anybody that's that you felt like you were on the couch today and you got some help, we will be sending a bill. Just let us know what segment helped you best. This is a licensed professional you're talking to here. So, hey, this advice don't come free too much. So, we appreciate you stopping in, man. But for me, man, y'all know how to keep up with me, man. All the social media sites, man. I have the links in the bio or in the header once I post this interview. And I appreciate you for coming on, man. Like I told you, man, before, I love what you're doing, man. I'm proud of you. I'm thankful for what you did for me early on in life, man. You were groomed to be a shepherd before you even knew it, man. So it's only right that you eventually advanced into this position, man. So y'all know how we close out, man. I always visualize your goals, man. After that, accomplish those visualized goals. 9/11. Gone.